Hello and welcome to World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Will Bain with you today. Thanks as always for being with us. Coming up on the programme, thousands of dock workers have gone on strike in the United States and it could have major implications for global trade.
These supply chains are very tightly organized, so they're not really set up for disruption. It really creates havoc in the supply chain.
Also today, as one of the key events for the luxury goods industry, the Paris Fashion Week comes to a close, we ask the questions that really need answering. Are supermodels wrapped in bright yellow DHL parcel tape really high fashion?
Vêtements is known to be very eccentric and it goes viral. That image went viral. Mm. So it gets people talking about the brand.
Yeah, we'll have much more on that, but also some of the biggest companies in the world, LVMH, Gucci-owned Kering and Hermes, who have been displaying their wares at the Fashion Week, trying to make this the start of a bit of a comeback for the luxury goods sector, which, as we've talked about a lot of times on the programme, has been under some pressure in the past year or so. And as I'm sure you've been hearing across the World Service today, we will take a look at the impact of Israel's now ground offensive is having on business world, both inside and outside of Lebanon. Yeah, there are, of course, significant humanitarian and military concerns. NewsHour, Outside Source, going to be the places to hear all about those. But as you can imagine, already having a huge impact on everything from currency valuations to global airline schedules. So we will get you up to speed with all of that as well before we leave you today on World Business Report. We're going to kick off, though, on the east coast of the United States, where the first strike by dock workers in almost half a century is underway. What are we going to do? Shut it down. So say members of the International Longshoremen's Association. Tens of thousands of its members are on strike over pay and also what many of those members see as the threat of automation to their jobs. Here's the union's president, Harold J. Daggett.
I'm going to tell you what I'm looking for. I'm looking for $5 across the board for 6 years. And I'm going to fight for it. Because those greedy companies are making billions of dollars and they don't want to share. That's why we're out here now fighting for a contract. And there's more money on the other side of the contract with container royalties and everything. I don't want to get into that here. But we're going to fight for it, and we're going to win it. Or this portal will never open up again from here to Houston. I'm not playing games here. Yeah.
Well, one of those cheering in the background might have been Scott Weiss. He's worked at the port of Newark in New Jersey on the US East Coast for 25 years, and he was asked if automation of the port was inevitable.
No, I think we do a better job than the robots. And down the road with robots, how will anybody work? The whole world will be robots, and who's going to pay the taxes? Who's going to have jobs? So no, I think we're better.
Well, Scott was chatting to our North America business correspondent, Michelle Fleury, who is at the Port of Newark. Michelle, great to have you with us. Thanks for being with us on World Business Report. Sounds pretty noisy, first of all, so I'm guessing what striking workers are there, are they picketing?
Of Newark. I've got on the one side the airport, on the other side there's a rail line which would normally transport the goods that are unloaded here at the Port of Newark. But right now all the cranes are sort of static. There is nothing going on here. Instead, I'm looking at a kind of sea of yellow high visibility jackets. Workers here on the picket line holding signs saying no work without a fair contract and automation hurts families. And that's what we keep hearing from people here, that is a big issue. They are concerned, much like we've seen in other strike action across America in recent months, whether it's Hollywood actors or writers. They're concerned about what automation and technology will do to their jobs. They're also pushing for higher wages, still lingering anger over the pandemic. When they had to go to work every day, and what they see as sort of supply chain disruptions that resulted in higher shipping costs and ultimately higher profits for these companies, they're saying they want their fair share now.
And they might not be playing New Jersey's favourite Bon Jovi behind them, but this is a scene potentially being replicated right up and down the East Coast, right? How many ports are we talking about? What's the scale of the strike?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking over 30 ports from along the East Coast, north of here in Boston, all the way down to the Gulf Coast. The volume of imports and exports that are affected is massive. You've got estimates from bankers basically saying it could cost as much as $5 billion in losses to the economy. We're talking immediate impact on things like farm products, because they have to be moved around fairly rapidly so that they're fresh, but also cars. That is a big import and export, particularly for European cars travelling to the US, to their factories in the south. So you're going to start seeing an impact also potentially on retail items. That trend for just-in-time deliveries will hurt. But workers here are determined to stay the course because they say this has to be done. You played that clip there from the ILA union boss, Mr. Daggett, earlier, who was greeted with huge cheers, I should say, when he turned up. Fighting talk saying that if we have to shut it down, that's what we're going to do.
On that movement of products, let's hear a little bit more about that now, because I've been speaking to Hamid Mogadan. He is the founder and chief executive of one of the world's biggest warehouse firms, Prologis, and he told us a little bit more about that potential impact.
This has been telegraphed for quite some time, so it's not coming as a shock or a surprise. So some of the supply chains have already adjusted in anticipation of this strike. But nonetheless, it's going to have a dampening effect on the economy, and it's going to interfere with the proper functioning of the flow of goods. A very similar strike, work slowdown, occurred on the West Coast about a year ago, and that certainly shifted a lot of freight volume to the Eastern Seaboard ports. So the Eastern ports were the beneficiary of this, and now they're going to sort of pay the price for this, and the West Coast ports are going to pick up the slack.
That West Coast strike had a huge impact on lots of companies in particular, didn't they? I'm thinking of Dr. Martin's, a UK stock market listed company, for example, that repeatedly, even now, still points to that event as having a huge impact on them.
Absolutely. I mean, these supply chains are very tightly organized and they're highly optimized. So they're not really set up for disruption. And whether that disruption comes as a result of a strike or a pandemic or, you know, weather events or whatever, it really creates havoc in the supply chain and it has implications up and down the supply chain.
And it's the unwinding afterwards, right? Even if the strike was called off today, things presumably are already in the wrong place, containers in the wrong place, ships in the wrong place.
Absolutely. It takes quite a bit of time for it to adjust and normalize. Usually by that time, there's some other event that happens that's not anticipated.
What's your sense? We've seen a lot of numbers talking about the impact economically. What have you kind of managed to put a figure on what impact it might have both on you and your sense on the wider economy?
Actually, in terms of its impact on our company in a sort of a bizarre way, it improves demand for our product because while it slows down the economy, all these goods
need storage.
Up somewhere. Yeah, exactly. So its direct impact on our business actually in the short term is positive, but I don't like making our money that way. I mean, it's not good for the economy, and ultimately, if it's not good for the economy, it's not going to be good for anybody. So quite a bit of different impact overall than for our business. But I think depending on how long it goes, and again, it's happening at a pretty bad time because we're just getting ready for the Christmas season where a lot of retailers do the majority of their business. I think it can be pretty detrimental, and I'm sure it's going to get politicized because it's happening a month before the U.S. election. So there are lots of dimensions to it that are non-trivial.
Hamid Mogadam, the boss of one of the world's biggest warehousing firms, Prologis, they're saying it's going to get political. Well, Michelle, he was spot on because it's got political already, right? We've heard from the White House.
Yeah, I mean, the White House has basically said that Biden will not use his executive powers to halt the strike and force both parties back to the negotiating table. Intervening to stop the strike, I think it's fair to say, is sort of a political calculation in the sense that it could basically sour blue-collar workers who would decide the election in critical swing states. But at the same time, if this develops into a lengthy work stoppage, the flip side is it could cause pain for consumers, it could drive prices up again and delay imports of things like cars, bananas, and even Christmas trees, plastic Christmas trees. And so, you know, that is the political risk. You've also had Harold Daggett, as I said, the head of the International Longshoremen's Association, who was here a short while ago, and he said, slap tariffs on this. We're ready to stay here as long as is necessary. So huge political risks right ahead of the election.
I was going to ask you about that enthusiasm level, I suppose. Easy on day one, isn't it, of a strike to be very enthusiastic. But do you sense from the people you've been chatting to, like Scott and other workers, that they're there for the long haul? Have they got enough 80s soft rock, I suppose, to keep them going as well?
Yeah, we've had some pop tunes as well this morning. The music has been varied. But it is that idea of trying to kind of keep momentum going, keep up the spirits. Look, you know, when you speak to the union leaders here, they all know there is plenty of attention and focus on day one, on the first week. But once things get into week two or three and the weather gets worse, will that enthusiasm still be there? Part of the issue is that on the one hand, it seems like the union is ready to dig in on this because there is lingering anger over kind of the pandemic and being forced to work daily. The other side has also seen increased shipping rates from these disruptions. And so they also maybe are not as incentivized to rush back to the table, because ultimately any disruption is going to lead them to be able to charge higher prices.
Michelle.
So we'll have to see whether the White House intervenes.
Michelle, thanks so much for your time. Michelle Fleury there, our North America business correspondent, speaking to us live from the port of Newark in New Jersey. Well, and Sophie Freeborg is the Vice President of Global Ocean Freight at the freight forwarding firm Zencargo. And Sophie, thanks so much for being with us on World Business Report.
You're welcome.
Saying, first of all, just explain to people in a sentence, if you can, what freight forwarding companies like yours do.
We are a digital freight forwarder, meaning that we organize transportation for our customers, exporters and importers all over the world on the main, and for the US market on the main routes, which are Europe to the US and Asia to the US, East Coast and West Coast.
And as a result,
directly in the middle of the crisis now.
I was going to say, as a result, working with a lot of these ports that are at the moment closed, the immediate impact so far then.
So what we see as of today, where we are day one of the strike, is an operation disruption starting, 36 ports being closed. And we are seeing now that ships are starting to anchor outside of the ports, waiting to see what's going to happen, and having cargo on board, either from various parts of the world. So the disruption is going to be massive if the strike lasts, in terms of global trade fluidity, and that impacts broadly exporters and importers trading with the US market.
We heard quite a bit of the arguments there from the union and from the workers. Do you understand some of those concerns?
Well, yes, I think it's fair to understand them, and it's a very difficult job, and they have to be rewarded for that. But what I do not understand is automation is a difficult subject, and I think ports have to become more efficient, more productive, in order to be more able to receive these big container ships. And this is the sense of the world. I would say this technology, this is a robotization. It's a very difficult subject.
And that ultimately impacts the price that we pay for all of those products that Michelle Fleury was listing, everything from plastic Christmas trees to clothes.
Yes. And of course, what we're probably going to see is a higher cost. There will be a higher cost for the shipping lines, which will be reflected in higher shipping rates for the customers, that could drive prices up on end products.
And that would be global, you think, Anne-Sophie, as well? Just, you know, we'll have listeners all around the world, Asia, Africa. They would be potentially impacted by this.
Absolutely, absolutely. If we take the example of the medical supplies, 50% of pharmaceutical ingredients that are consumed in the US are imported from India. So you see immediately the U.S. East Coast are the main gateway for these products. You see immediately that there will be a direct impact if we can't provide these medical supplies in the U.S. on time. And they are very time-sensitive products, such as the food, for example.
In a globalized world, it shows you why we think this story has got international importance for all of you. Anne-Sophie Freeborg, thanks so much for your time. Anne-Sophie is the Vice President of Global Ocean Freight at the freight forwarding firm Zencargo. Fiona Sincotta, Senior Market Analyst at Citi Index, with us to look through what's moving financial markets. Afternoon, Fiona.
Hello.
And I'm guessing this is one of those things, right?
Yes, that's right. I mean, it's something we're very much keeping an eye on at the moment, particularly for example, retailers, which are account for around half of ship volumes from the US ocean. So sort of, you know, stocks such as Costco, Walmart, designer brands, they're the ones that we're going to be watching. At the moment, there's sort of been a mixed response. But I think, you know, if these strikes do continue for an extended period of time, then they're going to be areas that we'll be watching.
The other thing we're watching, and I'm looking up at the TV screens above me in the studio now, every international news channel on the planet running this warning at the moment from the United States Embassy that they believe Iran is going to fire rockets at Israel. This is in response to, in the early hours of Tuesday, as I'm sure you've heard across the World Service, Israeli forces making an incursion into southern Lebanese territory. The politics and the military machinations of this are going to be mopped up very well by plenty of our colleagues across the World Service. But Fiona, already having an impact on things like global oil prices.
Yes, that's right. I mean, even before the announcement, oil prices were actually down at the start of the day, down around 1.3%. And following the announcement, oil's now trading up almost 3%. We've had a 4% jump up almost in oil prices, just on concerns of supply disruption in the Middle East, Iran obviously being a supplier of oil. So yes, we've also seen safe haven flows into, for example, gold, which is now trading over 1% higher. And also the Japanese yen is attracting safe haven flows as well.
Yeah, and impacting companies as well. Seeing KLM, the big Dutch international airline, saying it's going to cease all of its flights to Israel until at least the new year under those threats of those rocket attacks. More from Fiona in a moment. We'll pick through more market stories with her. But that, if that's the kind of global implications immediately, what about for the Lebanese economy, an economy that, if you're a regular listener to this programme, you'll know has been under significant pressure for quite some time. Sami Nader is a Lebanese economist. He's founder of the Levant Institute for Strategic Affairs and joins us live from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Sami, thanks for being with us on World Business Report.
Thank you for having me.
The mood in Beirut at the moment, first of all, perhaps before we come to the economics.
The mood is a mood of deep anxiety and a lot of fear because the Lebanese people are still recalling the devastating impact on the 2006 war. This is a feeling or a sentiment of a déjà vu for them. That means the amount of destruction, the amount of displaced people that are today filling the streets, and today it's raining. So the spectacle of is total human catastrophe.
Since the Israeli airstrikes were ramped up, what has been the impact on, you know, day-to-day businesses, banks, shops, things people rely on all the time, the kind of core bits of the economy? Have those stayed open? Have those had to shut?
I mean, it depends on the area, actually. I mean, the whole economy has, got a big impact, like banks, schools, and major institutions are closed. However, it depends on the areas for small businesses. In the areas where you have the Shia community, I mean, the political base of Hezbollah, mainly the south of Lebanon, the south suburb of Beirut, Dahia, or the Bekaa, this is a total closure of all type of businesses, institution, and this is where the major amount of destruction and death toll and displaced people.
And the impact then that's having, I mean, you talked already about the pure humanitarian impact, right, you know, from destruction or disruption to people's homes or roads or things like that. What about to their personal finances then as well?
I mean, this comes at the very wrong moment for Lebanon, you know, because Lebanon is already going through a financial and economic crisis. The Lebanese pound has lost 98% of its value before this war. 80% of the Lebanese population is under the line of poverty, according to the World Bank. Unemployment is above 40%. And this comes actually while Lebanon is reeling from four consecutive crises. And you had the financial and economic collapse in 2009. And it was preceded by a wave of Syrian refugees as a spillover of the Syria war, which has put a lot of pressure on the Lebanese economy, on the Lebanese infrastructure. Then you had the COVID thing, then the Beirut port blast that destroyed like one third of the capital city, Beirut. And now we had this war. People lost their house once in 2006. Now they are losing house again. And guess what? They don't have any money in the banks because all savings were lost due to the banking sector collapse. And so this is to say that the situation was dire before the crisis, and now it's kind of catastrophic.
And does that mean that international support is going to be key? Because presumably the Lebanese state isn't in an economically robust enough position to provide the type of support that might be needed should this ratchet up.
This is a good question, actually. I mean, let's face it, the international support is here and not here at the same time. That the international community promised Lebanon a financial support provided they go through reforms. Up to now, not a single reform has been achieved. And now, as long as Hezbollah is in command, he's calling the shot, I'm not seeing any international support to this country unless there is a total redesign of the Lebanese state and the country back to a normal constitutional life.
Sami, thanks so much for your time. Sami Nahedat, the Lebanese economist, founder of the Levant Institute for Strategic Affairs. And as you can imagine, given he's in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, at the moment, plenty of people wanting to get in touch with Sami, I'm sure. So you could probably hear the pinging on his phone in the background on that line. You're with World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Let's turn back to the financial markets again with Fiona Sincotta, Senior Market Analyst at City Index. And Fiona, we had more inflation news, this time for the Eurozone, the countries that make up the group in the European Union who use the euro currency. And again, better news on that front.
Yes, that's right. So inflation is to 1.8% annually. It's below the ECB's, the European Central Bank's, 2% target for the first time in 3 years. And this basically suggests that the European Central Bank will likely cut interest rates again in October by 25 basis points. And that would mark the third interest rate cut from the central bank since it started cutting rates in June. So, you know, good news as far as the Eurozone is concerned. That'll just help ease pressures on households.
Yeah, and feels like a bit of an international picture, doesn't it, of perhaps cuts to those key borrowing rates throughout the back half of the year into the kind of Northern Hemisphere winter. We shall see. Let's turn to Europe, France, in fact. Paris Fashion Week closes out today. It was one of the biggest spectacles around for the luxury goods industry. And this year, well, it included the great and the good, as always, including supermodels wrapped in DHL parcel tape, a PETA protest, that's the animal rights group, and the French First Lady Brigitte Macron on the front row of one of the shows. But the luxury fashion market has been in something of a slowdown in recent months, with major brands facing declines in sales. Plenty then to chat to Bloomberg's European luxury retail correspondent, Angelina Raskaway, about.
This year in 2024 with the luxury sector is that after the pandemic boom years that we saw, we're seeing clearly a slowdown that's affecting really across the board. So initially, if you were one of the weaker brands and you were in turnaround phase, think about Gucci or think about Burberry, you probably saw the slowdown hit much earlier. But what we also saw in the second quarter results in July is that even the big ones, a major slowdown compared to last year. So in October, throughout October, I mean, LVMH is going to report third quarter results on October 15th. We're going to start seeing more, have a deeper sense of what happened in the third quarter, which will likely show a further slowdown. There's a lot of worries about China, about the mood, the consumer appetite in China. Last week, there were news of a stimulus and the markets got really excited. So we'll have to see if the consumer starts spending again. But even in Europe, if you think about Paris, Paris is a big, you know, big destination for luxury shoppers. And over the summer, Paris held the Olympics. So that meant that a lot of the luxury shoppers who would normally come, especially in July, they were not present. So we'll see if some of those shoppers went somewhere else in Europe to spend their money.
I mean, is it all about China, the pressure that they're feeling, or are there other issues for some of the big houses?
For sure, there's a macro picture, there's China, but you could also argue there's also the US and Europe. And what we've seen on the macro picture is that there's been a slowdown. Basically, right after the pandemic, 2021, 2022, there was a lot of excitement, people, you know, getting out of their house and spending. And then inflation started to bite. And initially, the luxury consumer, you think, you know, he or she is probably wealthier. They have a spare cash to spend on expensive handbags, but they do start feeling the crunch as well. And especially on the entry level products, think, you know, all these brands, they don't sell just, you know, very expensive coats or handbags or shoes. They also spend, you know, sell you relatively affordable sunglasses or beauty products. And we started seeing curbs on these entry level products.
And fashion weeks are obviously sort of occasions to sort of lead the fight back, if you like. So what does the fight back look like in the past couple of weeks?
So the big ones, for instance, Christian Dior, so that was last week. There was definitely a nod to the Olympics, which LVMH had just sponsored. The catwalk was interesting because it featured a sealed tunnel with an archer shooting arrows with models strutting alongside it. The collection was very sporty. It was meant to show a very strong woman. It had a lot of black and whites and stripes. It felt much more urban and less classic than previous collections. And interestingly, First Lady of France, Brigitte Macron, attended it. She was on the front row sitting next to Bernard Arnault.
The big question I still have remaining, Angelina, is why was the supermodel Gigi Hadid wrapped in DHL tape?
Exactly. That was Vêtements. Vêtements is a label by Vassalia, Guram Vassalia. His brother actually designed for Balenciaga. I mean, Vêtements is known to be very eccentric. You know, they're not afraid of mixing high, you know, quality materials with low quality materials. And it's that contrast that really, you know, surprises the audience. And as you say, you know, and it goes viral. That image went viral. Mm. So it gets people talking about the brand.
Angelina Rasquet bringing us to the end of World Business Report.